biggest mistake that they make is what they name their company so often, and it's not their fault.
If your brand sucks, your marketing team is fighting an uphill battle.
This year, I think we'll do $26 million in revenue. It's about 4 years post-rebranding, and just an incredible story.
He literally wrote the book, Branded, Not Blended.
I can't raise my price. No one's going to pay me this much for this particular service. That's a brand issue. That's a perception issue.
Dan explains why a disruptive, memorable brand is your ultimate competitive advantage.
When COVID hit, they shut down all the commercial HVAC projects. So she lost 80% of her revenue like overnight.
This is AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros, the show for contractors who want to grow without wasting time or money. If you're in roofing, HVAC, plumbing, or any home service business, we break down how AI and modern marketing can help you book more jobs, close more leads, and build a business that runs without babysitting every task.
Most contractors think marketing is about buying more ads. But the truth is, if your brand sucks, your marketing team is fighting an uphill battle. My guest today is Dan Antonelli, president and founder of KickCharge Creative, the branding powerhouse behind more than 3,000 home service brands. Dan started out as a sign painter in the 90s and has become the go-to expert for contractors who want to stand out, charge premium prices, and build brands that customers remember. He literally wrote the book, Branded, Not Blended, and his work has helped companies like Grasshopper Heating and Cooling grow from struggling with a generic name to $26 million revenue after a rebrand. In this episode, Dan and I dive into why so many contractors get branding wrong, how weak branding leads to higher ad spend and lower conversion rates, and what it really takes to become 5 mile famous in your market. We talk about the power of track wraps, how to avoid white van syndrome, and why branding impacts not just customers, but also recruiting, culture, and even private equity valuations. And in today's AI-driven world, where content is cheaper and noisier than ever, Dan explains why a disruptive, memorable brand is your ultimate competitive advantage. If you're doing 2 to 5 million and want to break into the 10 million more a mark, or if you're tired of spending more on ads without seeing better results, this conversation will show you how the right brand makes every dollar of marketing work harder. What's up, everybody? This is Mauricio Cardinal, Contractor Marketing Pros. I'm super excited to have Dan Antonelli from KickCharge. Welcome to the show.
What's up, buddy?
Doing well, man. Nice to see you. Super excited to have you on, right? I've known about you for a little bit of time, actually, and really excited about just talking to you and understanding what it takes to be successful in terms of branding and marketing, all that stuff. So let's get into it. You built over 3,000 brands, right, in the home services space.
Yep.
How did you go from being a sign painter, right, in the 90s to becoming the go-to branding expert for contractors?
It's been a journey, that's for sure. You know, listen, when I first started out, I mean, I loved working with contractors. I loved doing lettering on their vehicles. And my parents just didn't think that being a sign painter was probably a long-term good career for me. So they encouraged me to go to college. And I would say too, I probably wanted to go to college as well, because I think I was just trying to get out of the house, and that was an easy way to do it. So I went to college and I studied advertising and got a job as a graphic designer in New York City. But I really missed working with contractors, I missed lettering. I missed doing trucks. I missed all those things. But I always thought when I started, like, that it would be really cool if small businesses had a single place to go to get everything that they needed. So you could get your logo, you could get your at that point it wasn't truck wraps, but you could get your truck lettered. You could get a brochure, you could get business cards, uniforms, and even websites at that point. So it was like late 90s, I was doing websites for contractors and things like that. So that philosophy really hasn't changed over the last 30 years. That's ultimately what we do today. So single source for contractors to get everything that they need to market their business, but foundation being really rooted in having a strong brand as the most critical aspect of success. So all those other channels that we do for people, if you do not have that foundation, then none of those other channels will function very efficiently. So the logo becomes really one of the most critical aspects of what we do for probably 95% of all the clients. So we build a brand first, and then we execute the deliverables after. So 30 years later, it's still blows my mind. It's more than 30 years. I mean, honestly, it's more like 40 years because I lettered my first truck when I was 15. So I'm 55 now. So it's just still get that sense of excitement when I see some of our work driving by, even though most of our work is not actually local. But when we do see something we've done, it still feels good.
Yeah, yeah. You coined the phrase branded, not blended. What does it mean for a contractor to be blended? And what's the real cost of blending in?
So, yeah, it's a great question. I think, you know, as we started working more and more with home service contractors, most of them really did blend in, right? So they were bland in that sense. So I also coined the slogan or the phrase white van syndrome. And that's kind of what we call these contractors that have just the plain white van that just kind of blends in with everything else and does not stand out. And so a lot of what we talk about and certainly what I speak about is the notion of how can we build a disruptive brand, a brand that stands out, a brand that's more memorable, and a brand that lives in someone's mind so that later on when that person needs service, they are thinking of your name only instead of a generic search term on Google to try to find someone like you. So it's a common thing. You know, it's really funny because you see people on Facebook groups, you know, talking about how they're struggling with marketing. And quite often, you know, they've tried all these other things. They're paying all this money for PPC or LSA or paid ads. And I'm just like, you guys are doing all these things while you're ignoring what it takes to be visible in your own community. You're trying to be visible online and there's a very high cost for visibility online and a very high cost per lead. Whereas if you focus more on becoming 5 Mile famous in the community that you serve and building a brand that truly connects with people and that people truly care about, you'll need to spend less money online and you'll be busier just because your brand lives in someone's mind. So,
yeah, you say that if your brand sucks, your marketing team is fighting an uphill battle. Can you explain why branding is the foundation of all marketing?
Yeah, for sure. I think that, and that's a common complaint too, where, you know, contractors want to bash their digital marketing company. And in some instances, it's warranted and it's deserved. But quite often you could look at the numbers and you could see the number of leads that are being generated. And then you could also see some things that are in the data that really speak to fundamental issues. So when you see things like poor booking rates and poor close rates, you see a lot of open estimates. And then you're seeing a very, very high cost per acquisition. Those are all things that are giving you clues about things that you need to be working on to be improving. So quite often it's not that you need more leads. It's that you need to do a better job with the leads that you're getting. And if you have weak branding, all those KPIs and all those metrics are going to be affected by it. So, you know, you see very strong correlations between weak branding and low average tickets. And that seems painfully obvious that that's what would happen if you have a weak brand. Well, it's going to be hard to tell Mrs. Jones that she should pay a premium for your service. But what I love about what I talked more about in the second edition of my book was I pulled in so much more data. And that was why I wanted to do a second edition, because I spent the 3 years after the first edition was published collecting data from people about, you know, what the effects of the brand were. So what were the KPIs before the rebrand and what were the KPIs after? And you do see dramatic things affected, like, again, booking rates, close rates, average tickets, and acquisition costs. And I think that those are the metrics that should really matter for people. And again, the data tells you so much of what's actually happening. You just have to know what to look for. So it is quite easy to say, you know, my marketing company sucks and I'm not getting any good leads or anything like that. But I will say that marketing companies that work with brands that we've built, they're super happy because their results get amplified. And the effects of brands are really, really visible when you look at metrics on digital, especially even things like branded keyword searches and then conversion rates when you come to the website. And we did some studies comparing the effects of websites that home service websites that had a brand by kick charge versus websites that did not have a brand by kick charge. And we were showing 10 times the amount of inbound branded keyword searches coming into that particular website. And then when they came to the website, we had double the conversion rates of compared to websites that did not include our brand. And it wasn't just one website we compared. We compared 25 websites. So 25 with the KickCharge brand, 25 without. And these are the metrics that were affected by it. So just look at that number two. So if you're bringing in on average 50 more inbound leads, or it's actually 500 more branded keyword search per month on average our brands were getting. And then the conversion rates were 12% versus 6% without a KickCharge brand. So that equates to about 50 more leads a month for a better branded company. Same spend, right? Same digital spend, right? These were all organic branded keyword searches. So why are people typing in the brand name of a well-branded company? Well, because they seen it, they remembered it, it connected with them. That's why these generic white fans and brands that don't connect or are generic, they don't work. Like they it's going to just take you way more money to market those types of companies.
Yeah, it's getting harder too. It's getting more competitive.
100%.
And paid ads, all honestly, paid ads don't work as well as they did six years ago.
Yeah.
100%. That's a fact. And I could be any company. I don't care who you are.
And I'll tell you this too. One thing, like on that point, as you say, it's getting harder. Well, why is it getting harder? Well, it's getting more competitive because PE is flooding the market with ad spend and it's driving up the LSA and the PPC cost, right? So what are we doing or what can you do as a smaller company to be competitive with that? And again, it's that grassroots efforts that PE is not doing. They're not sponsoring little leagues. They're not engaging with the community. They're just throwing money at marketing, right? Because it's easy to do that, right? It's not as effective, but it's easy, right? So how am I going to compete with this ad spend? Like I can't spend $200 a click for this lead, but can I spend $200 to sponsor the soccer team? You know, can I be in the parade for the 4th of July or the Halloween parade? So that visibility within your community, it takes effort, but it's the fastest way to get your brand to be 5 mile famous because it's typically not what those other larger companies are doing. So making the most of every single impression that your brand makes is the goal of having a disruptive brand. Like, how do I maximize? You hear the old saying, and you've probably heard this where somebody has said, well, it takes 7 to 8 touches for people to know your company name. Well, what if you could cut it down to 4 or 3? Like, what would that mean to your business if it only took 3 impressions for people to remember your name versus 8 or 9, right? So you amplify the effects because you have a brand that is more effective.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. What kind of most common mistakes that you're seeing from contractors that are in the between the 2 to 5 million range that are trying to break into the $10 million range?
Yeah, well, listen, first of all, the biggest mistake that they make, and it's literally on day one, is what they name their company, right? So often, again, and it's not their fault because you don't know what you don't know. And it's not like until now, like I want to say until I literally wrote a book on home service branding, there wasn't a book on home service branding, right? But you start this company and you say, hey, I'm going to name it after myself. So I'm going to use my last name or I'm going to use my initials. So it's, you know, JP Heating and Air. Right. And you think that that's a good idea. It sounds like a good idea. Right. There's no one else using that name, so I can use it. Right. But the problem is again, there's no promise associated with a last name brand or an initial based brand. And there's no real reason why anyone should remember it. So, you know, naming is typically the biggest mistake that you see people make literally from day one.
Yeah. Yeah. And I that leads to my next question. One of the ones you talked about last time was a specific company was Grasshopper Heating and Cooling. They were, I think, PCM Mechanical.
PMA Mechanical,
yeah. How did that impact that change? Like, can you walk me through that, how that happened, what the impact was?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's kind of a funny story, but, you know, she was maybe 20% residential and 80% commercial. And when COVID hit, they shut down all the commercial HVAC projects. So she lost 80% of her revenue like overnight. So she reached out to me and she said, Dan, I need to really start trying to scale residential. And I have this name. I want you to work with this logo with this particular name. And it was PMA Mechanical and she was changing it to PMA Comfort. And I said, listen, I would love to work with you. I'd love to help you. But branding you as PMA Comfort will not move the needle enough for what we're trying to do here. So if you're set on using that particular name, like I completely respect that, like that's totally cool. Just I'm not really, I don't add enough value at that point to help you in this journey. So So she was a little, I think, a little upset that I didn't want to take on the project, but I was certain that if I did, it would not move the needle in a significant manner. And the one thing I hate taking money for things that I don't believe will work for someone. Like, it's just not how I roll. So she tried for a month or two on her own to try to forge forward with that particular name, and then just concluded herself that it was not going to get her to where she wanted to go. So then she called me back up. She said, okay, I'm ready. And so we came up with the name Grasshopper. And Grasshopper this year, I think, will do $26 million in revenue. It's about 4 years post-rebranding. And just an incredible story of, I mean, she's just an amazing leader and an amazing culture. But the one thing that's really amazing about this particular story is just grasshoppers have a unique characteristic, and that is that they can only move forward. And that really became the anchor of the brand story of Grasshopper. So we as a company will only move forward. And their tagline is forward as a way of life. And that speaks not only to the internal culture, but to the people who you're trusting to come into your home, right? So it's just been a remarkable story, but there is literally no way that that happens with PMA Comfort. Like, you can't build that culture, that environment, that brand story with a name like that. And so, you know, probably one of our most successful rebrands, I would say. I happened to just see her at Pantheon last week and got to hang out with her and talk to her a bit. And she's just doing some incredible things. She's launched a group of, you know, she's taking in other companies and she's helping them to run their companies. And she's doing an amazing job.
How about for owners that have been in business a long time, that have their name already, like it's branded, but it's kind of generic. Like, but it's kind of their initials, but it's been around for like 50 years. What do you say to that? What approach would you recommend in that scenario?
Yeah, and that's a good question. And you know, we look at that. You have to look at existing brand equity before you ever make a recommendation about a name change. So we want to know, how many years have you been in business? What is the revenue size of the existing company? So, you know, when you start approaching numbers that are north of $3-5 million in revenue, you know, you have to take a much harder look at that, because the name is more well known than if you were just, you know, 500,000 or a million or something like that. You also want to look at, well, truly, how well known are they? How well branded are they currently? So we've rebranded and renamed companies that were north of 10 million, but in most instances, they still looked invisible in the community that they actually served, because the trucks were generic. There was nothing unique about the company name, and they just sort of blended in. So you got to measure that. It's not something that first of all, anyone should ever take lightly. If you're considering that, there has to be a very, very deliberate and specific methodology of rolling out a name change. And if you do it wrong, it can be a real challenge for that particular company. You know, we've done about 150 name changes to date. So we've got the process and the methodology really dialed in on how to do it correctly. I will say this, you know, with extremely rare exceptions, no one that's gone through it has regretted going through it. But it is a scary initiative. It's something that it feels very scary, of course, and it should, because it's a very serious decision to make if you're going to rename your company. But if you've only been doing it a couple of years, if you're under a million in revenue, you have a lot of latitude at that point. It's much easier at that revenue. And that's why, like, at a certain point, you have to make that decision. So once you start creeping up in numbers and you're at 2, 3, 4, 5 million in revenue, and, you know, you start getting to the point of no return in certain instances where you're too big now to pivot and make a change. And so figuring that out as early as possible and dialing in the brand as early as possible is ultimately the objective, or the best thing to strive for, because it will only be more expensive and more risky the longer you wait.
So you mentioned you've done it about 150. Can you walk me through the actual process? I want to like know more about that. What is the actual steps? Is like a outline? Like how do you do that for your clients?
Well, certainly, you know, even in the case of doing for Grasshopper, we wanted to know what were some of the key things that she was hoping for the brand to communicate. What do we want to anchor a brand story around? So you think about names that can help convey a brand promise. You think about names that can help convey a actual visual. So I don't know if you've specifically seen the logo for Grasshopper Heating and Air, but I bet you have an idea of what it should look like. And if there's listeners that have never seen their logo, I bet you they think in their mind what it should probably look like. So those are key characteristics that help people remember a specific brand name. But, you know, we're going to communicate with the owners. We're going to find out, what are you trying to achieve with this? Who are you trying to speak to? What kind of voice are you hoping the brand to communicate? And then we basically go to work and start ideating on different names that we think would meet those objectives. And then the most critical piece, or one of the most important pieces, is we have to make sure that the name is truly able to be used. So the federal trademark research is a really, really critical part of that particular journey, and making sure that the name that we're recommending is a name that you will be able to attain a federal trademark. Once we have the clearances from the lawyers on that particular, you know, question, then we start the creative and we start, you know, sketching out what that brand would look like. There's a method for letting all the existing customers know why the name change took place, what it means for them as a customer, assuring them that it's the same amazing team and leadership that they've come to know and trust over the years. So you have to make sure that it's rolled out in a manner that is not disruptive. Like, hey, make sure you reach out to every single customer we've ever been in their home. Let's do a direct mail piece to them. Let's make sure our social media is talking about it. Let's do PR about it. So you roll it out in a method, in a manner that makes the people feel confident, makes them feel part of the reason why even the name change needed to take place, because the brand had grown and had no, and it stopped representing who we are as a company and where we wanted to go. So you kind of use it as a way to sort of re-inspire them. And I think also, even from the employee perspective, you will find that initially a lot of employees are generally scared of a name change. Like, they're scared of what it might mean to them. So rolling it out to the employees also in a deliberate fashion is very important, because you want them to understand why we're doing this. And the reason why we're doing it is because we're hoping to build a bigger company and present more opportunities for them to grow within this company. But this name was holding us back. This name wasn't delivering promise to our customers. And this name no longer represented what we had evolved into. And I think that's always a question that owners should be asking themselves, is when you look at your current brand, can you look at your current brand and honestly say that what that brand represents is indicative of what you provide when you go inside that home? If the answer is no, then why are we keeping it? This may have been the brand that you started with, but does it actually represent the level of service that you provide today? And if it doesn't, then that's something to definitely take a hard look at, because we want the brand to look and feel as good as the service you actually perform. I want Mrs. Jones to believe that before you ring the doorbell, that you are going to crush it. You're going to be the most amazing experience of taking care of her home and her equipment, whatever, right? So if the brand no longer speaks to that promise, then why are we keeping it? You know, why doesn't it represent who we've evolved into? I know you started this company, maybe you had a bootstrap and you had no money, went to the sign guy, he threw something on the truck, and that's become your logo. Cool. Now you're at $2.5 million in revenue. You got like 15 people working for you. Does this really look like what you guys do and the level of service you provide? Or does it look like what you were 3, 4, 5 years ago when you first started? And you got to ask yourselves those hard questions, because every single consumer is making those same assumptions. They look at that van and they believe something about the experience. All branding is doing is trying to control what she feels before you get to ring the doorbell. You may get to ring the doorbell and you may go inside and you may kill it. That's fine. And that's great. That's going to leave her with an impression also. But I want her to think that before you get to prove how good you are. And ultimately, that's what brands do.
Yeah, yeah. Some contractors worry that a mascot might feel cartoonish, right? I'm sure you got that a lot. What do you say that mascot naysayers, and how mascots actually build trust with homeowners?
Yeah, so there's two points on that argument, right? So first off, mascot branding for home service contractors. The vast majority of mascot branding that you see being done for home service contractors is detrimental to that contractor. It's done poorly. It's executed in an amateur fashion. It's not rendered properly. The emotive characteristics of the mascot itself are not executed well. And so you present a unpolished image with this mascot because the mascot was never designed properly. So for those people that are haters on the mascot, I'm with you on that. Because when I see some of this stuff, I'm like, oh my God, this stuff looks so bad. it looks so amateurish. But when it's done well, when it's done professionally, like, they kill it. And I'll give you one quick story, because people would always say to me, they said, Dan, well, is a mascot better than a non-mascot? And I would think hard on that question. I would start to say, well, I always say to myself, well, it's not necessarily whether it's mascot or it's not mascot. It's implementation of a brand across all your channels and how professional is it done is the correct answer. But I said, let me do some research on this, right? So I looked at, we have over 100 companies right now that, it's probably more now, but when I did this, we had 101 companies that were north of 10 million in revenue. And I listed them all out. And I said, okay, how many of this 100 have a mascot and how many do not have a mascot, right? Because wouldn't that give me a barometer? Wouldn't that at least give me an indication that, well, maybe mascots are performing better? But the reality was, and it was kind of sad on one hand, because I kind of wanted a more definitive answer myself, but the reality was it was 52 that had a mascot and 51 that did not, or 49 that did not. So it was like exactly in the middle. And so I think there is a lot of hate on the mascots, and I think it's warranted in a lot of instances. And I think that that's something to be very careful about. Like when you see, especially some of the really, really badly done caricatures of the owners, that are, the proportions are all messed up and it's not rendered professionally. Well, then, yeah, as a consumer, I'm going to look at that and I'm going to say, that doesn't feel very professional. But when they're done well, they certainly kill it. I mean, Grasshopper is a great example. I mean, that's a mascot-based brand. You know, they added $25 million in revenue in 4 years. It seems to be working pretty well there.
Yeah, Maston is another one that you talked about. I saw it. It's a mascot, but it's not like
Yeah, not a cartoon mascot. It's more a nostalgia-based Norman Rockwell style approach. Yeah.
Exactly. What design elements make a logo or wrap memorable enough that people search for you instead of searching like AC repair near me?
Any way that the elements can speak to someone and sort of exhibit the characteristics that make them feel something, right? And I think that's really the whole point too, is the emotive characteristics of a brand and how does the consumer connect to them on a deeper level. So not every brand is going to have that strong of an effect, but certain brands really do connect in a way that is different than others. And that's why kind of you look at, and you may have heard me talk, and it's not necessarily that I'm hating on this approach, but when you see like a clip art, sun and snowflake logo for an HVAC contractor, it's not that it doesn't communicate heating and air, because it sort of visually does, right? You got the sun and the snowflake, right? But why would Mrs. Jones really connect with that on a deeper level? Well, how would that make her feel something about the experience of using you? And Maston's is a great example where that brand is nostalgia based. So it's meant to evoke a time period in which, you know, people thought, you know, home service technicians were craftsmen. You know, they were honest people. They were going to do the right thing. I think their tagline is something to the effect of, you know, service the way it ought to be or something like that, right? And the feelings and emotions that brand produced, you know, that's connecting with them on a deeper level. So anything that you can do, any pathway to rent space in their mind, is how you should look at a brand. And you know, funny story with them is we did that branding for them, and he was wearing his uniform and he was in a store, and literally a woman got behind him, and we have it on video, which, like, he asked her to speak on camera afterwards, but she's like, I saw your van the other day, and when I was driving behind it, it just made me think of a different period of time when I could trust people in my home and when I knew technicians did the right thing. And I just want to let you know, how that impacted me. Now, like, I mean, blowing my mind, I'm like, do you think that she is ever now going on Google and saying plumbing company near me? No, because it connected to her. She's not going to forget that particular brand name. So anything that you can do that creates a storyline that is meaningful to them and that they can connect to is obviously the quickest way to sort of win their hearts and then win their minds, because that's how they're going to remember.
Yeah, and the color of that brand is very unique. I haven't seen it before. I like it a lot. It's very unique, kind of like brownish. I'd say reddish. Like, well, I don't know if you don't.
Yeah, like burgundies and then some ivories, and it just has a very warm feeling to it.
Yeah, yeah. You call like the truck wraps, which are, you know, one of the things that you're best known for. And it's one of the, I've talked to many contractors and they all say that truck wraps are basically the best form of advertising for your business, right? For home service companies. Can you talk about that? Why that is the case and what makes a memorable a truck wrap?
Yeah. So first off, it is the best form of advertising for a home service contractor with the caveat that so long as it's done correctly. There's a lot of ineffective truck wraps. There's probably more ineffective truck wraps on the road than there are effective truck wraps. And largely because the branding isn't solid when you attempt to do your truck wrap. So if you do not have a solid foundation with your brand, if you do not have a strong brand to begin with, you will never build an effective truck wrap. It will be functional, but it will never be as optimal as it could be with a better brand. But the reason why it's the most effective is because it has the lowest cost per impression. So thousands and thousands of impressions being made, you look at the initial investment, let's just say for argument's sake, it's a $5,000 investment to wrap your truck, and it's going to last 5 years. So for $1,000 per year, you're getting hundreds of thousands of impressions. You want to buy a billboard in your market to promote your business, you're going to spend $1,000 a month or $2,000 a month or $3,000 a month. You have limited impressions, and it's only up for that period of time. Like after 30 days, it's down and it's gone and it's forgotten, right? So it's the most effective, and definitely when they're done correctly, dollar for dollar, nothing even comes remotely close to it. But like I said, most are not designed well. There's too much information. There's an overload of things. It's not legible. I don't know what the brand is for or who the brand uses. People putting all sorts of crazy things on there, bullet points and listings of all these things and their services and QR codes and all this other stuff. Distill it down to its most simplistic form. You want to take away as much as you possibly can, not keep adding to it, because people can't read it when it's driving by.
Yeah, but you do recommend having a CTA, right? Like at least a phone number on there just for them to call you.
The priority that we have is obviously brand, tagline, website. The optional elements is ultimately phone number. Like you don't need a phone number on a truck wrap. People will argue with me about, oh, well, how are they going to contact you? I'm like, seriously? They don't know how to contact you? They're not going to be able to figure out how to contact you unless you have a phone number. Right. So you often see stuff like with wraps that have huge phone numbers. And I always say, like, the bigger the phone number, the weaker the brand, because it's not really, again, how people typically will find you. And you think about the last time you took out your phone and you had it in your hand and you literally dialed 10 digits. When was the last time you did that? You more than likely Googled something and then the button was there, call now, and you hit the button and you called now. So like, if you can't figure out how to contact a well-branded company, like,
yeah, that's the power of, like, exactly. So if you have, like, let's say 20 trucks and they're all branded really well, you're going to get more Google searches because of that. That's the whole point, right? And that's the whole point of that. It's also kind of compound with reviews, with your SEO. It all, like, works together because it's people are actually Googling your name, and it actually does have a positive impact on SEO as well. One of the things you talked about is being 5 mile famous. Every contractor should be 5 mile famous. Can you explain that? How do contractors achieve that?
So again, 100%, like, it's really funny because you see contractors, they're always constantly trying to expand their service area. They're like, hey, I got to go further out. I'm going to start marketing these other communities, right? And the notion of 5 mile famous is like, well, what would happen to your business if everyone within 5 miles of your office knew you existed? Would you need to go further than 5 miles if everyone within 5 miles knew you existed? Or would that be enough business for you right then and there? And the notion of what you need to do to become 5 mile famous is rooted in visibility in the community, and how do we become more visible in the community? So what are we doing as a company to make our brand name memorable? Are we, again, sponsoring sports teams? Are we sponsoring little leagues? Are we going to community events? Are we going to home shows? Are we at the parades? Are we at the picnics, things like that? All those things, people keep seeing them. They're going to start remembering them, right? So thinking about everything that you could, you know, even just the basics like sight signs, like, are you putting up sight signs for every job that you do and leaving it up for a week? Like those little touches, because if I see my neighbor's got a sight sign, I'm like, okay, well, they use them. There's some trust there. Like, they did their homework. I'm going to just call them because I saw my neighbor use them. Like, so all those impressions really the idea of having everyone within our community understand who we are and what we do, and making sure we're making conscious efforts to continue to be a part of our community that we serve. And again, those are things that you don't see PE doing a significant amount of resources or putting resources towards.
Yeah, 100%. AI, right? So AI has really changed a lot of everything, right? It's allowed people to create content much cheaper, right? So it also created a lot more noise. And my argument is obviously branding is becoming more important because of that. Can you talk about that? Like how that's impacted today, like 2025 and in the future too?
Yeah, sure. I mean, listen, you see a lot of people trying to build brands with AI. On a certain level, I think some of what AI is capable of is better than some of the other resources that they used to try to do. Like they used to go on Fiverr or 99 Designs and try to get brands that way. I think it's actually a little bit a step up from that, which I never recommend the people doing 99 Designs or any of those crowdsourcing sites. But there are some issues and there are some challenges with it. First of all, like, you know, it's only going to be as good as the person that is doing the prompt. And so what are the qualifications that the person doing the prompt has? And are those, you know, the right qualifications to build a brand? Do they understand what needs to happen with that brand and how that brand needs to live and breathe and function in countless other applications besides just a logo, right? So understanding those technical issues, it also doesn't produce artwork that is usable in most applications. So it's not vector-based, so it still has to be recreated and redrawn if you intend to use it on a truck wrap or other mediums. So I'm not sure everyone understands that particular aspect of it as well. And then there's copyright issues with it. So you can't copyright something that's generated from AI. So the legal protection you have on something that's generated there is diminished, right? Instead of doing something that's from scratch. And I think also just, again, not knowing enough about what you should be asking or what you should be doing versus not doing, right? So should I be using home services in my name, or does that not make any sense? Do you know enough about how to answer that particular question? Well, the reality is you should never use home services in your particular name. Well, why shouldn't you use home services in your name? Well, because it requires you then to list out what those home services would be elsewhere. So home services is not just HVAC. It could be roofing. It could be siding. But again, do you know enough about what to put in the prompt to answer that question correctly? Maybe not. You know, and then you see the way some of these illustrations are done that come out of AI. And most of them to me, like you could spot them a mile away. Like they just scream AI. And we just did a sort of a rebrand for someone that initially had something generated by AI. And the difference was striking between the two. You know, the difference of what the mascot was communicating, what their eyes said, what their mouth said, you know, the warmth, the friendliness, like those are all the elements that AI still to this date is not getting correctly. So can it be used for other things and help with some content? Yeah, I just don't think that branding is really the best application for it to really shine. But I know for some people, it's their only option, which, you know, I totally understand. But again, it'd be like going to, you know, I want to say going to a heart surgeon but not knowing enough as to whether or not, you know, what you were asking it to do or telling him to do made any sense. You know, it's kind of like, you have to have a really good understanding of branding to begin with in order to, I think, leverage that.
Yeah, yeah. How do you see the role of AI changing branding, or is it going to change it?
You know, it's kind of funny because people, you know, even when it first came out, they're like, oh my God, like that's going to wreck your business, or that's going to be, you know, terrible for you guys. Here's what I would say is honestly, like last year we had a record year. This year we're pacing for a record year. It hasn't impacted us in a negative way because I think the people that are hiring us are not trying to do it themselves. They're trying to go with a team that has a very good amount of experience and a lot of, you know, amazing success stories and case studies to prove that we know what we're doing. So I don't think that the people that normally would hire us are generally speaking looking to find out the cheapest way to get their brand done. And I always like to say too, and it may sound self-serving, but the notion of the most expensive brand you'll ever buy is one you paid the least for. And I truly believe that. I mean, you see, again, just how it affects so many other things. But, you know, like I said, for us, it hasn't really impacted us at all, to be honest with you. Maybe that's being naive. Maybe it will impact us down the road. I mean, I don't know. But for right now, you know, again, those aren't, generally speaking, the people that are looking to work for us.
Yeah, I think it's going to actually increase your business over time, because what's going to happen is basically what I've seen is that it's going to get more competitive. So basically what you're saying is what's happening is that people are going to just do a lot. So the common way to get more leads is, okay, get more reviews, have a nice website, have a nice logo, all that stuff, spend money on ads. But that's going to be like the regular stuff. That's like the what you need to do in the beginning just to keep up. But in order to actually expand, you need the other stuff as well. And that's going to be even more important, because like reviews, like paying ads, that's what everybody's doing already. They're already doing that. And it's very important, but that's kind of like the bottom of the barrel. If you're not doing the other stuff, then you're gonna lose out, right? And it comes to branding, that's one part, but also the other part for me is also content for these guys. It's important they understand, start creating content on their own, because it's gonna make you stand out, right? It's gonna make you stand out.
It's funny that you say that too, because the day before Pantheon in Anaheim last week, Google hosted a workshop for home service owners, and they spent so much time talking about branding. And I thought, how refreshing is that? Like because every other seminar last week was about AI this and AI that, and here's Google basically saying that brand is the most important part of search, and focusing on video, focusing on, again, visibility in the community, and just making sure you're a brand that people know and that people trust. And to your point, like getting the reviews and having that aspect funnel in and be part of the ranking strategy. So I almost think that there's so much actually more, there's more focus now on brand than probably beforehand. And I think it ultimately will become something that people are taking a much harder look at. And as the cost per lead keeps skyrocketing, people are really just trying to figure out, hey, well, what can I do other than that? Because I'm tired of being a slave to Google and paying them all this money every month. I'm tired of how much it's costing me for digital marketing on an ongoing basis. Wouldn't it be nice if people just knew my name and they could just type it in and I'm going to win that search every time?
100%. That's a mistake I made before. That's why I'm not creating content and kind of doing the YouTube stuff, doing all the stuff that I needed to do actually years ago. And I'm really taking that approach. And that's what's required now. Basically, it's required for every company. Another way to think about it is just kind of every company is going to be their own media company. That's kind of like the way to think about it. Like it's going to be their own content department, own content marketing, right? All that stuff is going to be required, because local service providers, before I think about 6 years ago, 5 years ago, what was to get results? Well, we just have a lot of reviews, right? Get reviews, right? Do Google ads, which it would work, right? Maybe do some Facebook ads, and SEO would take care of itself. And that's it. Like that's basically, you would get leads, you know, get results, right? But that's now like the bottom of the barrel. That's what you need, other stuff in order for that to be successful, because that is what every company has been doing for a long time. And if you're not doing that stuff, it's just the bare minimum. You need the other stuff as well to keep up.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. So you talked about like pricing, right? After contractors do a rebrand, they can charge, you know, premium pricing. Why do you think they can do that? And how does that impact their business?
You know, again, you know, the common complaint or challenge that you hear home service contractors talking about is I can't raise my price. No one's going to pay me this much for this particular service. And often that, again, that's a brand issue. That's a perception issue. There's a reason why you hit a ceiling, because Mrs. Jones doesn't believe there's a reason to pay a premium for your service. But literally, like so many case studies and the new second edition of the book, where from an operational standpoint, nothing was changed. And they were able to increase average tickets 10, 15, 25%. Some instances, like it's crazy. And they're like, Dan, it's just everyone just expects to pay more with us, and that's fine. Like that's great. And that's what it's about. It's again, why, you know, and you could look at just common things like, well, why do people pay more for, you know, an iPhone versus an Android phone? Well, some people think it's better. Like, I'm probably one of those people because I'm an Apple person. But, you know, well, why do I pay more for a Mercedes when I could get, you know, a Hyundai? Well, they both get you somewhere, right? But I want the best. Like, so I think Mercedes is better or BMW is better than Hyundai. So, well, why do people feel that? Like, what are the things that went into people believing that? A lot of that's marketing, right? That's part of what marketing, getting people to believe something about the experience. So I think to me, the 1-2 punch, like if you're really trying to crush it on sales for your home service company, you get the branding dialed in and then you get the right sales training dialed in. Because even all the sales trainers, they, again, love working with KickCharge brands, because when you roll up to that home, the consumer already believes something about what they're going to get. So definitely looking at that and the correlation between perception and average tickets, it can't be understated.
How does branding impact recruiting and company morale? Can a new look really change company culture?
Yeah, so that's another thing too, where people, most people don't come to me and or come to KickCharge and say, hey guys, like we want to rebrand because we want a better culture, or we're trying to attract better players. That's a secondary thing that they experience after the rebrand. But I think when you look at culture and you look at the effect brand has on culture, again, when you rebrand the company, they've got better swag. They've got beautiful branded trucks that they're excited to represent. They've got a uniform they can feel proud to put on. Those are all things that affect, you know, again, their morale. It affects the culture. It affects also just their perception of what the company is doing to ensure their future, right? So this company has chosen to reinvest back into its own, right? It reinvests back into building a better environment for the people that are a part of it. And so you see the rebrand become this catalyst for change within the organization. And it starts really from the top down, because even from an owner's perspective, you see the owners get much more engaged and much more excited about what they're doing. Now, you know, they could have had the same logo for years and years and years. Sometimes they're not, you know, they don't understand, again, how much it's going to affect them personally, this rebrand, but you see them get super energized and super excited, and they can't wait to get the first truck done, and their enthusiasm and also their confidence goes up with it too. So that affects, again, even a technician out of the field, because they're just more confident about the brand that they now represent. Like they're a part of something special. You hear Tommy Mello talk about it all the time, about how the rebrand for A1 that we did for them, how that affected recruitment and their ability to attract the A players that they're trying to get. I don't know that you can attract the A players when you've got, you know, a white van and, you know, it's just super basic and you're not going to be super stoked to put on a uniform or wear the hat and things like that. So it's definitely a correlation between the two.
And speaking of Tommy Mello, like obviously you work with them, and how do companies like them, like bigger companies like them that I think is doing like about $250 million or something crazy, how do they treat branding? And what are the lessons they can, smaller companies like doing the 2 to 5 million range, what are the things they can learn from those companies like Tommy Mello's?
Well, I think Tommy's a great example of someone that operates from the mindset of never being complacent. So when he came to us 5 years ago and said, I want to rebrand, he was at 30 million in revenue at that particular point. And you don't see many people at 30 million in revenue saying, hey, you know what, this is a really good idea. Let's change everything about my branding and start over, basically, right? But he knew, again, and this is the question that I asked earlier, he knew at that point that brand did not represent what they had evolved into. Again, trying to get premium pricing with a brand that doesn't speak to a premium experience, definitely a challenge. And he was starting to run into that. So he said, let's change the branding. And there were aspects of his old brand that I wanted to leverage in a new brand. There was a couple of colors that I thought were important to carry over. But we did it in a manner that we knew would also appeal to women. So we were deliberately picking colors and a color palette that felt premium, but yet still engaging and warm. And I think he's actually at 300 million now, which is, it's hard for me to wrap my head around what that means. But you don't see a lot of people at that revenue recognizing the significance of how critical it is to get that piece right. And it's surprising to me sometimes, again, when you see some of these larger companies with really weak brands, those companies not even understanding how it's negatively affecting all these other KPIs. But Tommy really understood that. He knew that the trucks were not working, that they were not wrapped properly, and it didn't, again, just represent where he was looking to go and the future of the company.
I wanted to ask you about what you just said about the demographics, right? And demographics. You, in the home services space, is it typical? Like, does every client you work with have a specific, like, demographic and avatar they're looking for? And does that, you have to tailor that avatar to the brand? How do you typically, like, determine that? I think in a home services space, typically, well, I guess depending on the product or they're selling, but is it like mostly women that, like, women homeowners? Okay, got it.
I think the stat is over 80% or 84% of the home purchase decisions are initiated by a woman. So, you know, again, making sure the brand speaks to them, making sure it addresses their fears. So, you know, I talk about it in the book, like, having a brand that is super masculine or something that maybe feels threatening. And you may say, well, of course not. You would never do that. But then you see these mascots with a heavily muscled looking guy and he's running at you with a wrench. Like, what are you doing? Like, she's already scared about who's coming to her home. Why are we making her more scared? Right. So we're always thinking about her as a primary consumer of our services, right? So how do we want to make our brand feel to her and build something that makes her feel at ease at who's coming to her home? I mean, you're going to be let into her home. Like, that's a big deal. So if you could make her feel like the person who's showing up is professional, they're honest, trustworthy, competent, professional, like, all those things are what the brand should be communicating before you get to ring the doorbell.
Awesome. So for contractors that are doing between 2 and 5 million right now, what's the first step they should take if they suspect their brand is holding them back?
Well, maybe they should rebrand as one of the first steps to think about. But I think, like we mentioned earlier and we talked about it, is I would always just take a hard look at what the data tells you. So if you're finding your digital marketing spend to be spiraling out of control, if you're finding that your dollar is not going as far, if your booking rate is low, if your close rate is low, all those metrics are really signaling to you that there's something fundamentally wrong. And I will say this, you will never build an effective digital marketing strategy or a advertising strategy for that matter without having a great foundation. And a lot of people overcome that by just spending more money. You know, so the notion that overspending, and it's not my quote, it's Roy Williams' quote, but overspending on marketing is the tax you pay for being unremarkable. Right. So a lot of times when I hear guys even talking about how much money they need to spend on marketing, they're like, well, you know, I need to spend 10% of revenue on advertising to grow, or 11%. And I'm like, I go look at their branding and I'm like, yeah, you do need to spend 10% or 11% because your branding is unremarkable. We've got clients at 5% that are doubling their business every single year. Well, how are they doing that on 5%? Doesn't make any sense, right? You know, everyone says it should be 10%. I'm like, well, no, they have a brand that people care about, that's memorable, that's working properly. That's why they don't need to spend as much as someone else with a weak brand.
Let's talk about your book. Where can people find your book?
So here's my book. You could grab, my book is called Branded, Not Blanded, and you could get it on Amazon, or you could get it on our website at kickcharge.com as well. I think anyone that's considering going into home service, read this book before you file your LLC. It will save you a ton of heartache down the road. And even if you're only a few years in or a year or so in, I think there's so much good information in the book. And you'll look at marketing so much differently and you'll understand more about the psychology behind marketing. I basically took, you know, the last 15 years of everything I've learned about branding for home service contractors, and I just brain dumped it into this book, and you know, I got really a good response from people that, you know, have said one thing. You know, it's just kind of a funny thing that somebody has said, but I've had people say things like reading the book has made them sick to their stomach, and you would say, well, that's probably not a great endorsement of the book, but it made them sick to their stomach because they realized how many things they had been doing wrong and how much they had been spending because of it. So I think there's a lot of really good content in there to really help people understand the power of a brand and what it can do for them.
And generally speaking, I would recommend just not only your book, but also just any just get educated on marketing in general. Just not only just your branding, which is one aspect, a very important aspect, but just marketing in general. That's a huge part. And I think that's a big thing that a lot of contractors are missing is that aspect. Dan, where do people find you?
You know, you could hit me up on kickcharge.com and send me an email. You could hook me up on Facebook. You know, I have a profile on Facebook. If you want to send me a message or anything, just look me up there. I should pop up.
Awesome. Dan, thank you, man. I really appreciate it. It was an awesome show.
I appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for listening to AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros. If you got value from today's episode, do us a favor. Follow the show, share it with a contractor friend, and leave a quick review. Want help using AI or smarter marketing to grow your business? Head to contractormarketingpros.net and book your free strategy call.